听众大家好，欢迎大家翻嚟收听 2CR 澳洲中文广播电台。
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to 2CR Radio. I'm Sally, your host today. It's our honor to having Senator Dave Sharma with here today. Senator Dave Sharma is the Senator for New South Wales, Shadow Assistant Minister for the Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs, as well as the Shadow Assistant Minister for the International Development and the Indo-Pacific. So, welcome you, Dave.
Thank you, Sally. It's our pleasure to have you.
你好 ，Sally， 多谢你哋邀请我嚟。我哋今日好高兴能够邀请到澳洲联邦参议员 Dave Sharma 嚟到我哋嘅访问当中啦。Dave Sharma 参议员是代表新州的澳洲联邦参议员，同时也是影子公民以及多元文化事务助理部长，以及影子国际发展以及印太事务助理部长。Dave 你好啊，欢迎来到我们的访问当中。
Thank you for having me on, Sally.
Yes, so as this is your first time joining us on the 2CR Radio, could you please start by introduce yourself for a listener who may not familiar with you yet?
咁因为今次系你第一次嚟到 2CR 电台啦，可唔可以先同大家介绍下你自己咧？
Yes, my name is Dave Sharma. I'm a senator for the Liberal Party in the federal parliament, the parliament that sits in Canberra. I represent New South Wales, the state of New South Wales. I wasn't born here. I was born in Canada, but my family migrated here when I was about 4 years old. I grew up in Sydney, and for my time before politics, I was a diplomat that represented Australia in Washington, D.C., in Papua New Guinea, and in Israel.
好啊，我叫 Dave Sharma， 是自由党在澳洲联邦议会的参议员，亦都是位于肯培拉的联邦议会。我代表新州，我并不是在澳洲出世的。我出世在加拿大，但在我大约4岁的时候，随住家人移民一起来到澳洲。我在悉尼长大，在从政之前，我是一名外交官，曾经代表澳洲在华盛顿、巴布亚新几内亚以及以色列工作过。
Mm-hmm. So we know that you got an distinguished academic background before, achieving a top HSC result and then graduating from Cambridge Law School with a first class honours. And then we know that you later spent a lot of year in Australia's diplomatic service, which in the embassy. Could you tell us more about your experience working in the foreign affairs across different countries, which you mentioned in the Washington, D.C. and the Papua?
我哋知道你喺从政之前有好出色嘅学术背景，包括系 HSC 嘅状元，以及之后又以一等荣誉成绩毕业喺剑桥大学法学院。同时，我哋知道你后来喺澳洲外交部入边工作多年，包括喺大使馆任职。可唔可以同大家分享一下你喺外交事务领域入边，以及你啱啱提到喺华盛顿同巴布亚新几内亚等唔同地方工作嘅经历呢？
Yes.
In Papua New Guinea. Yes.
Yes.
yes, of course. So I joined our Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade soon after I finished university. So I joined as a university graduate. Mm-hmm. I was about 23 years old at the time. It wasn't necessarily what I thought I'd do. You know, going through high school, I went to school at a public school on the North Shore of Sydney. And I thought I would probably do medicine or law. And I got, you know, high marks and a good TER. But I had an offer to go to Cambridge University and study there. So I thought, well, that's a good opportunity and I'll come back to Australia. So I went over there and I started studying science, actually, but I changed to law after my first year. And then I came back to Australia and I actually started to do medicine. I was doing graduate medicine at the University of Sydney. And it was whilst I was doing medicine in my first year that I thought, yeah, I enjoyed it, but I wasn't sure I wanted to be a doctor and in the hospital, and it didn't really excite my passions. And I just saw that there was the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade was advertising for graduates, graduate intake. And mm-hmm. I'm not from a diplomatic family. I've never had any family members who've worked in the federal public service or in diplomacy before. So I just applied more on the spur of the moment, mm-hmm. thinking, oh, I'll see how this goes. And you know, I had to go and, I think, sit a written exam and do an IQ test and do a psychological test and do a group activity and then a group interview and then other interviews. And, you know, I just kept going further and further, and eventually I ended up getting an offer. And I thought, okay, I'll try this. This could be interesting. I'll see if I like it. So I deferred my studies in medicine, mm-hmm. Moved to Canberra, joined the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, and I did really enjoy it. I spent the next almost 20 years there. Mm-hmm. Representing Australia in Papua New Guinea, in Washington, D.C., and in Israel. But I also, you know, represented Australia, you know, in many other roles and places on short-term visits and short-term missions as well. Mm-hmm. So it gave me a good understanding of Australia, our place in the world, the importance of our relations with other countries, the importance of trade to Australia's prosperity, and also some of the dangers and risks that Australia faces. It was a fascinating job. It's always a privilege to represent your country abroad, and that was a great honour for me to be an ambassador for Australia. Mm-hmm. But I thought after I finished as ambassador to Israel, I felt like I wanted to contribute to Australia in a different way. Mm-hmm. And that was really why I got into politics.
是的，当时在巴布亚新几内亚，我是在大学毕业之后呢，不久加入澳洲外交贸易部，当时是以大学毕业生的身份加入，我大概23岁了，其实并不是我一直以来以为自己会做的事。当时在高中时期，我就读于悉尼北岸的一所公立学校，当时我以为自己将来大概会读医或者法律，我的成绩很好，亦都取得很高的 TER 分数。但后来我获得了剑桥大学的录取通知，可以去到那里读书，所以我想是一个很好的机会。我之后再回到澳洲，所以当时我去剑桥一开始是读科学的，但第一年之后，我之后发现自己不适合，于是转去读了法律。然后我回到澳洲，实际上又开始读医科。当时我在悉尼大学专攻研究生的医学课程，就在读医学的第一年，我觉得我虽然喜欢他，但不确定自己之后是否真的想在医院成为一名医生。这件事没有真正激发我热情。后来我刚刚好看到澳洲外交部正在招聘毕业生，开放毕业生项目的申请。我其实不是来自外交世家的，但我的家人从来没有在联邦公务系统或者一个外交领域工作过，所以我当时只是临时起意想申请试下会怎样。之后我需要参加笔试，还有很多不同的智力测试、心理测试、小组活动等等，以及其他的面试。一开始我就想一关一关往前行，最后获得了录取通知。当时我想我就试下啦，可能很有趣的，我就看看自己是不是喜欢。于是我暂停了我的医学学业，搬到去肯培拉加入澳洲外交部，而我当时也很喜欢这份工作的。之后的日子，我就在那里接近工作了将近20年，代表澳洲曾经派往巴布亚新几内亚、华盛顿 DC 以及以色列等等地方。不过除此以外，我亦都有许多其他的身份，在不同的地方参与短期的访问和短期服务，代表澳洲工作。所以这段经历对我和对澳洲以及澳洲在世界中的位置、澳洲和其他国家关系的重要性，以及贸易对澳洲繁荣的重要性，以及澳洲所面临的一些危险和风险，都有了很好的根基理解。这一份是一份非常令人着迷的工作来的，能够海外代表自己的国家始终是一份荣誉，而且能够担任澳洲大使，对我来说是一个极大的荣幸。在我结束澳洲驻以色列大使任期之后，我觉得自己希望以另一种方式继续为澳洲作出贡献，而这个就是我后来加入政界的原因了。
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we know that you have also involved in a peace action before.
咁我哋知道你曾经亦都系参加过和平行动嘅。
That's right. Yeah. Yes, I was a what's called a civilian peacekeeper or peace monitor in Bougainville, which was a province of Papua New Guinea which had a terrible civil war from about 1988 to about 1998, 10-year civil war that killed thousands of people, and it was brought to an end by initially a sort of a ceasefire agreement, a truce agreement that involved the deployment of an international peacekeeping force effectively. Mm-hmm. And that peacekeeping force consisted of Australians, New Zealanders, Fijians, Niue Vanuatu and Solomon Islanders. And I was, about a year after I joined the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, I was sent over as a civilian. It's a military operation, but I was a civilian really doing political and diplomatic work. So, but I had to deploy with the army, which means, you know, I lived in army quarters, I ate army food, I slept on a stretcher bed, I had to learn how to like drive a four-wheel drive off a landing craft onto a beach, how to repair a tire, you know, all these sorts of things, how to sleep rough, how to camp, all those sorts of things, which was a great experience. I mean, it was a lot of fun, and I got to know the Bougainvillean people well and their senior politicians very well. And towards the end of my time in Papua New Guinea, we Australia helped bring that civil war to a final close with signing of what was called the Bougainville Peace Agreement, which basically provided for, brought an end to the civil war, provided for Bougainville to have a high degree of autonomy or independence within Papua New Guinea, and then to eventually have a referendum on independence. And being involved in that, putting an end to one of the worst conflicts in our region, was, you know, a real very enjoyable and worthwhile thing to do.
是的，没错，我当时担任的是所谓民事维和人员或者是和平监察员，地点是布干维尔。布干维尔是巴布亚新几内亚的一个省份，当地从约1988年到到去1998年经历了一场非常严重的内战，持续了约10年的时间，造成数千人死亡。这场战争最初是透过一项停火协议、休战协议而逐步结束的，当时也实际部署了一支国际维和力量。这一队维和部队包括澳洲人、新西兰人、斐济人、瓦努阿图人以及所罗门群岛的人。我是当时加入澳洲外交部大概一年之后被派往当地，以民事人员的身份参与工作。这项是一项军事行动，但我本身是民事人员，主要是参与在政治和外交方面的工作。不过我需要跟随部队部署，这个意味着我要住在军营里面，吃军队的食物，睡在担架床上面，还需要学习如何将四驱车从陆艇开到去海滩上，怎样去修补轮胎，怎样在一个简陋的环境中睡觉，怎样露营等等的不同的方式。这段是一段很宝贵的经历，也是很有趣。我亦都因此非常熟悉布干亚尔维尔的人民以及当地的高层政治人物。在我于巴布亚新几内亚工作接近尾声的时候，澳洲协助推动了签署所谓的布干维尔和和平协议，这个基本上结束了内战，并安排布干维尔未来举行独立公投，能够参与其中，协助结束我们地区其中一场非常严重的冲突，对我来说是一个很有意义的事，也很值得，也是令人非常有成就感的事来的。
This sounds like a really dangerous but exciting experience for you as well. So after nearly 2 decades in the diplomacy services, what motivates you to transition into the politics later in your career, which we assume as a late entry in as a politician?
听起落嚟，呢一段系一段既危险但又令人兴奋嘅经历噶。喺将近20年嘅外交服务之后，系乜嘢促使你结束你嘅职业生涯，转入政界，而且喺一段比较硬嘅时候进入呢个政治工作嘅
？Yeah, so look, firstly, I have a big belief that most politicians should be late entries. I don't think we're well served by people who make politics their career. I think we want people who come to politics from outside politics because we want people.To come to politics who bring some level of expertise from outside. So whether they're a doctor, a teacher, a lawyer, a nurse, a builder, an engineer, a mechanic, an accountant, the best politicians I've seen in Canberra are people who have experience from a career outside and they can bring that expertise to bear and you can learn from them. We do, unfortunately, have, I think, more...career politicians than we should, people who've only ever done politics and know politics and study politics. And I think that's unfortunate because for them, politics should never be an end in itself. Politics is meant to be a means to an end. It's the means by which you change the country or improve the country. But if politics is your only vocation, your only career, then your goal is just survival, right? Prosperity within that career, which means you're not necessarily in it for the right reasons. So yes, I came to it... later than some people, but to my mind, it's when people should be approaching politics, usually after 1 to 2 decades of another career. And for me, it was really about serving Australia in another way. So I'd served Australia for 2 years as a diplomat. I'd seen the strengths and the weaknesses of our country. I'd seen some things I think need fixing or addressing, or some risks that we are not dealing with properly in Australia or we're not conscious of.And so I thought the best way I can help strengthen Australia and further the opportunities in Australia is by getting involved in elected politics. And so that's how it came about.
是啊，首先我非常相信大多数政治人物应该在职业生涯后期先进入政界。我并不认为如果一个人一开始就将政治当成自己的职业，这个对我们的社会来讲是很好的。我认为我们需要的是在从政以外的领域进入政治的人。因为我们希望进入政界的人都是能够带来其他行业和领域的专业经验， 无论他们原本是医生、教师、律师、护士、建筑工人、工程师、技师定是会计师。我在肯培拉见过最优秀的政治人物，往往都是在政治以外有职业生涯经验的人。他们能够将这些专业经验带入政治，亦都能够令到其他人从他们身上学习。但很遗憾的是，我认为我们目前确实有太多职业政治人物，亦都是说我们那些所谓一生中只做过政治、只熟悉政治、只研究政治的人。我认为这个是比较可惜的，因为对他们来说，政治本身就是变成了一种目的，但政治本身不应该是目的来的，政治应该是达成某种目的的手段，是你改变国家、改变国家的方式。如果政治是你唯一的职业和事业，那你的目标就会变成了你要在这个职业里面生存下去，以及在这个职业里面发展。这个意味着你未必是出于正确的原因进入政治生涯。所以是的，我确实是比某些人更慢地进入政界，但我看起来这个其实人们应该进入政治的时间点，通常在其他职业工作了大概10到20年之后。 对我来说，这个其实是以另一种方式服务澳洲。我已经在外交部的身份服务澳洲20多年，看到澳洲的优势，也都看到澳洲的弱势。我看到一些我认为需要修正以及处理的问题，亦都看到一些澳洲没有妥善应对、没有充分地意识到的风险。所以我认为，如果我帮助澳洲变得更强大，推动澳洲往前发展，并为澳洲创造更多的机会，最好的方式就是选择参选政治。这个亦都是我进入政界的原因来的。
So what's the reason for you to pursue your politics through choosing as a liberal party after many years in the diplomacy?
那是什么原因令你希望透过自由党进入政治呢？背后的原因又是什么呢？
Yeah, so firstly, as a diplomat, I was non-political because I'm our public service in Australia is apolitical and non-political, you know, and I worked for governments of both sides. In fact, I was appointed as ambassador to Israel by a Labor government. I worked quite closely with a Labor government for about half my time as a diplomat and about half my time for a coalition government. But I guess when I left politics, I always knew that, look, that liberal values are ones that I think are better for Australia. I think those are the encouragement of aspiration and ambition, providing opportunity for everyone, making sure that small business and enterprise and individuals have an opportunity to grow something and build something and get ahead. And importantly, a country where people's freedoms as individuals and their distinct identity as an individual is respected. And that's really at the heart of, I think, liberalism is about seeing society as being built up from individuals and on the basis of individual rights, and not trying to typecast or pigeonhole individuals based on their ethnicity or their profession or their religion or their social class, saying everyone's of equal worth and equal dignity and everyone is worthy of equal opportunities. And I think at its best, Australia encapsulates those liberal ideas, but it's always a struggle to maintain them. So for me, the Liberal Party was my natural home. I have, you know, respect for my colleagues in Parliament who have a different view, you know, Labor and others. But for me, I think the liberal vision for Australia is the one that has shown to be the most successful and the most enduring and offers the most hope for resolving Australia's challenges and problems today.
首先，我作为一名前外交官，我当时是非政治性格，因为澳洲的公务系统是非党派、非政治性。我曾经为两大阵营的政府工作过，实际上我是由工党政府任命为澳洲驻以色列大使，而在我的外交生涯当中，大概一半的时间是与工党政府密切合作，而另一半时间则是与联盟党合作。但我想，当我离开外交界的时候，我一直都很清楚自由党所代表的价值，是我认为对于澳洲更有利的价值观。我认为这些价值包括鼓励人们有抱负、有志向，为每个人提供机会，包括小企业、企业以及个人都有机会发展、创造和建立自己的事业并向前迈进。更重要的是，这个关乎一个尊重个人自由，也都尊重每个人独特身份的新国家。我认为这个是自由主义的核心。自由主义认为社会是由个人组成，并且应该建立在个人权利和基础之上，而不是根据一个人的种族、职业、宗教和社会阶层将人简单分类或者贴上标签。他强调每个人都有同等的价值和同等的尊严，每个人应该获得平等的机会。 我认为在最好的状态里面，澳洲只是体现了这些自由主义的理念，但要维持这些理念始终需要努力。所以对我来说，自由党是我自然的政治归属。我尊重议会中持有不同观点的同事，包括工党和其他政党的人士。但对我来说，我认为自由党对于澳洲的愿景是被证明最成功，也是最持久的愿景，也都有希望帮助澳洲应对今日所面对的挑战和困难。
I see. So in the recent years, we see that there's lots of international conflicts has increasingly affected the community relations here in Australia. So from your perspective, how can Australia maintain the social cohesion while also protecting the national security and the community trust?
我明白的。在近年来，我们看到很多国际的冲突越来越多地影响到澳洲本地的社区型的关系。在你的角度来看，澳洲应该怎样维持社会凝聚力的同时，也都保护国家安全和社区的信任呢？
Look, that is a real challenge because, you know, Australia is almost, we're quite unique in the number of different communities we host here in Australia. You know, most countries around the world overwhelmingly are homogenous in terms of their, you know, ethnic and racial and religious makeup. Australia is quite unique in that we have people and have welcomed people from different religions, different faiths, different cultures, different ethnicities and different value systems as well. And so to ensure that all these people from wholly different, you know, parts of the world live harmoniously, you can't just rely upon that to happen by chance. You have to work at it and you have to nurture that. And I think an important principle that has been neglected in recent years is that whilst we allow, you know, we allow and welcome and respect people maintaining their identity, you know, that, that they are they're from a country, you know, maintaining their cultural and linguistic and ethnic and religious identity, we don't allow them and we don't permit them to import some of the historical grievances that might come with that identity and the historical animosities. And you know, that hasn't always been easy. I mean, there have been tensions in Australia throughout our history between different groups. I mean, you know, 60 years ago, it was between Catholics and Protestants in Australia, different religious groups, sort of same ethnicity. But we've also had, we took a lot of people from the former Yugoslavia in the 1990s who've just had been in a terrible civil war and, you know, they were at each other's throats. We've got people who are, you know, Greeks and Turks who've historically over the last 100 years had a difficult relationship. You know, we've got ethnically Japanese people here and ethnically Chinese, and Japan and China have a historically difficult relationship, as does Korea with Japan. But we've managed to function harmoniously because we've said once you come to Australia, you need to leave those differences aside. And it doesn't mean you need to discard who you are, but it means that you accept everyone else in Australia as your equal, equal of the same rights and the same protections and the same freedoms, regardless of what your parents or grandparents might have said back in the home country. And I think we have lost a bit of sight of that in recent years. And I think, you know, where I've noticed it most obviously is with growing intolerance and discrimination against Australia's Jewish community, because they've been identified with Israel during the recent conflicts in the Middle East, and because people have basically sought to make them responsible for the conduct of Israel in these wars, the conduct that they have not agreed with. And I think that has crossed a Rubicon in Australia. That has been a breach of our social compact, if you like. Just as we would not, you know, we would never seek to hold the people from another country responsible for the actions of those countries. Once they've moved to Australia, we say, you're Australian. You know, we don't hold you accountable for whatever's going on in your country. You're not part of the government there. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the last few years, we've allowed that to happen to Jewish people. And I think that's been at the expense of our social cohesion. And it's ended very tragically, of course, with a terrorist attack in Bondi, which, you know, was the worst ever terrorist attack in Australia's history, you know, in modern Australian history in 230 years.
这个确实是一个很大的挑战，因为澳洲在接纳不同的社群方面是相当独特的。世界上大多数的国家在族裔、种族和宗教构成上往往相对于同质化，但澳洲是很独特，因为我接纳并欢迎不同来自不同宗教、不同信仰、不同文化、不同种族以及不同价值体系的人。因此要确保这些来自世界各地背景完全不一样的人能够和谐共处，我们不能够只依赖于它自然发生，我们必须要主动努力，也必须要去培养这种和谐。 我认为近年来有一个很重要的原则被忽视，那就是虽然我们允许、欢迎并尊重人们保留自己身份，譬如他们来自某个国家保留自己的文化、语言、族裔和宗教身份，但我们不允许亦都不应该允许他们将这些身份相关的历史恩怨和历史敌意带入来澳洲。这一点一直都很不容易做到。澳洲历史上有不同的种族群体之间一直存在过紧张的关系，譬如在60年前澳洲曾经有天主教徒和新教徒之间的紧张关系，他们大体是属于同一族裔的，但因为宗教不一样。我们在90年代也都接收了很多来自南斯拉夫的人，他们刚刚经历了惨烈的内战，而两者在过去100年的历史关系当中也都有相当复杂的关系。我们亦都有日裔的澳洲人，亦都有华裔的澳洲人，而日本和中国在历史上亦都有复杂的关系，韩国和日本人之间亦都亦如此。所以我们之所以能够大致和谐地运作，是因为我们一直强调，一旦你来到澳洲，就要将这些历史分歧放在一边。这个不并代表你要放弃自己的身份，而是意味着你要在接受澳洲其他所有人都是和你同等的同胞，享有同样的权利、同样的保护和同样的自由，无论你的父母或者祖父母在原来的国家曾经有什么看法。我认为近年来我们在某种程度上忽视了一点，而我最明显看到的是针对澳洲犹太社群不宽恕和歧视正在增加，因为最近在中东的冲突期间，他们被同与以色列联系在一起，亦都因为有些人基本上试图令到他们为以色列在战争中的行为负责，即使那些行为并不是他们同意或者决定。我认为这个在澳洲已经超越了这条界线，如果可以在这里这样说，我这个已经违反了我们的社会约契，就好像我们从来不会在来自其他国家的人移民到澳洲之后，因为他们原籍国政府的行为而追究他们个人责任。我们会说你是澳洲人，我们不会因为你的原籍国家只是发生什么事而要求你去承担责任，你并不是那个国家的政府成员。但是不知道为什么在过去几年里面，我们却将这件事发生在犹太人身上。我认为这个是以牺牲澳洲社会凝聚力为代价，以这个最终非常悲剧性地以邦大的恐怖袭击告终，这个是澳洲历史上现代史上200几年来最严重的恐怖袭击来的。
Yes. So with what you mentioned about with the Bondi attack, we know that there's raising concerns around those different kinds of anti-Semitism as well as racism and broader concerns on social division. What do you think is the role of federal government can they play to ensure the multicultural communities feel safer and respect and include in Australia?
是啊，就好像你刚刚提到的邦大袭击事件来讲，我们知道其实现在社会上对于不同形式的反犹主义、种族主义以及更广泛的社会分裂都有越来越多的担忧。你认为联邦政府可以扮演什么角色，确保多元文化社区的澳洲感到更加安全、更受尊重，亦都有更有归属感呢？
Well, I think the federal government and all levels of government need to take a stronger position in cracking down on and condemning and criminalising conduct that is racist or, you know, basically persecuting people on the basis of their race. Now, whether that's directed at Jewish people, anti-Semitism, or whether it's directed at Muslim people, Islamophobia, or whether it's directed at Chinese people, or, you know, whatever else, we should never allow that to happen. We should never say, well, that's okay, that's just free expression. Because if we do, then I think we are tearing at the very threads of what holds Australia together. We are saying that, well, some Australians are fair game or some Australians are worthy of less protection than other Australians. And I think for too long in the lead up to that Bondi terrorist attack, some of our political leaders and some of those in power turned a blind eye or just sort of dismissed what was going on. You know, whether it was in Jewish synagogues, places of worship being firebombed or property being vandalised or businesses being graffitied or people being doxxed or boycotted or harassed or intimidated. I think people said, oh, well, look, people, you know, too many politicians and law enforcement and police sort of turned a blind eye to that. And as a result, it was able to build up a head of steam. So I don't think Australia can afford to have a casual or laid-back attitude to these things, because what's at stake is really our cohesion as a nation, our identity as a nation, as a place where people of different faiths and different backgrounds can live harmoniously.
我认为联邦以及各级政府需要采取更强硬的立场，打击和谴责并将种族主义行为或者基于种族迫害他人的行为刑事化。无论这种行为针对犹太人的反犹主义，定是针对穆斯林的伊斯兰恐惧症，或者针对华人的歧视，又或者针对任何其他的群体，我们都绝不应该允许这种事情发生。我们应该说没关系，这个只是言论自由，因为如果我们这样做，我认为我们就在撕裂维系澳洲社会的根本纽带。我们这样做就等同于跟其他人说，有些澳洲人可以被任意攻击，或者有些澳洲人比起其他澳洲人更不值得受到保护。我认为在邦大恐怖袭击发生之前，有相当一段长时间，一些社会政治领袖和掌权者正是对于发生的事情视而不见，或者轻描淡写。无论是犹太教堂定是宗教场所遭受纵火的袭击，财产被破坏，商家被涂鸦，定是个人被人肉搜索、抵制、骚扰或者恐吓。我认为太多政治人物和执法机构以及警方都对这些事件太过于放松，结果就是这些问题逐渐地累积并升级。所以我认为澳洲不能够以随意或者松懈的态度对待这些问题，因为真正受到威胁的是我们作为一个国家的凝聚力，是我们作为一个令到不同信仰、不同背景的人和谐共处的国家身份来的。
Mm-hmm. So how do you think we can draw the line among the freedom of speech and with those kind of you define as criminal? Because when we saying about like respecting, we also respecting the freedom of speech in different kind of ethnic community group.
咁你认为我哋应该点样去划分言论自由以及你所谓讲到可能构成犯罪行为之间嘅界线呢？
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I don't necessarily pretend that is easy, but I think it's one thing to express your political opinion. It's another to seek to punish or infringe upon the rights of others because of your political opinion. And that's what we saw too much of. So I don't have a problem with people expressing their views on the conflict in the Middle East, but I do have a problem with Jewish school children getting harassed or bullied or intimidated or yelled at, as happened, you know, at netball court in Maroubra just a few weeks ago because of something in the Middle East. That's impinging upon other people's rights and freedoms. And I think we need to be very clear that freedom of speech cannot be allowed to be exercised at the expense of other people's rights and freedoms, whether they have a right to live in security and safety, the right to play netball on a weekend with your kids' team, the right to practice your faith, the right to wear a religious insignia, you know? I don't think that should be a difficult thing. I mean, I don't think we should be allowing, protests that basically shut Sydney CBD every weekend for, 80 weeks running. Like, I think that's impinging upon the rights of business owners, the rights of regular shoppers. I don't think that should happen. You know, I don't think we should have a situation where on, 2 days after the 7th of October terrorist attack by Hamas in Israel, on a day when the opera house is being lit up to commemorate the victims of that attack, Jews are told to stay home because of the expected violence and intimidation of a protest against Israel. I mean, I think that's getting, those are examples, not just some, of when the balance between free speech and the freedoms and rights of others have been grossly mismanaged.
是的，我不会假装一件是一件容易的事，但我认为表达自己的政治意见是一回事，而因为自己的政治立场以试图惩罚他人或者侵犯他人的权利则是另一回事。而我们看到太多正是这种的情况，所以我并不反对人们表达他们对中东冲突的看法，但我不能够接受犹太学生因为中东发生的事情而被骚扰、欺凌、恐吓或者辱骂。这个自己个星期之前在一个模板篮球场所发生的情况一样，这个已经侵犯了他人的权利和自由。我认为我们需要非常清楚地表明，言论自由不能够以牺牲他人的权利和自由为代价，无论是他们安全生活的权利，定是周末同其他小朋友一起打板球的权利，实现自己的信仰的权利，定是佩戴宗教标志的权利，都应该受到保护。我不应该一点应该很难理解，我也不认为我们应该允许某些示威活动几乎每个周末都瘫痪悉尼的 CBD， 而且持续大概80个星期。我认为这个侵犯了商家和普通购物者的权利，我不认为这些情况应该继续发生，我也不认为我们应该出现这样的情况。在哈马斯于以色列发动10月7号的恐怖袭击后两日，圣尼的歌剧院点灯纪念受害者。 但是犹太人却被告知最好留在家，因为外界预计反以色列的示威可能会带来暴力和恐吓。所以我认为这些是言论自由和他人自由以及权利之间的平衡点被严重地处理不当的例子来的。
So meanwhile, at the same time, when Australia is facing growing debates among the migrations, housing pressure and social changes, alongside with the shifting voter support from the two independents to parties such as One Nation, how should the Liberal Party should respond in a way that reconnects with different communities while still maintaining Australia's multicultural successful story?
与此同时，澳洲其实正系面临移民、住房压力同埋社会变化越嚟越多嘅讨论，选民支持亦都出现咗从两大主要政党转向一国党等嘅政党立场情况。你认为自由党应该点样回应，先能够重新同唔同社群建立连结，同时维系澳洲多元文化嘅成功故事呢？
Look, that's a challenge for us as liberals. I think it's a challenge for all major political parties because you know we.In Western democracies more broadly, we're seeing a sort of a fragmentation, if you like, of the political system. People are increasingly wanting to vote for what we would have called traditionally minor parties and whatnot. But I think, you know, our value proposition as liberals has to be that we can govern the country in a way that is better for the country overall. Now, governing a country, you know, you don't get the luxury of being ideologically pure. When you govern a country...you need to be pragmatic, you need to compromise, you need to recognise their different interests. You need to recognise that you're there to govern for everyone, for the benefit of all Australians. And I think my criticism, if you like, of some of these minor parties is, firstly, they do not acknowledge or recognise that there are inevitable trade-offs in government. And secondly, that they don't actually seek to lay forward a vision for Australia that would be better for all Australians. They just seek to say, this is the vision that our supporters want to see. Politics is ultimately about compromise, and whoever's lucky enough to form government, you can't just govern for your own people or your own supporters or your voters that put you there. You're there as a trustee for the entirety of Australia. So I think our challenge as Liberals is to make clear that, firstly, we would govern for all Australians, but secondly, we would govern in a way...That would make life better for all Australians.
依个对我哋自由党嚟讲系一个挑战。我认为对于所有政党嚟讲都系一个挑战嚟噶，因为喺更广泛嘅西方民主国家当中，我哋都睇到政治体系出现某种碎片化，越嚟越多嘅选民希望投票俾传统上被称为小党派嘅政党。但我认为作为自由党，我哋必须向选民表达清楚，我哋能够以一种对于整个国家有利嘅方式去治理澳洲。治理一个国家嘅时候，你冇奢侈嘅空间去追求完全嘅意识形态纯粹，你需要务实，需要妥协，需要承认唔同群体有唔同嘅利益。你都明白你嘅职责系为所有治理所有人治理国家，为所有嘅澳洲人利益服务。我对于一啲小党嘅批评系，首先佢哋并唔承认或者认识到政府治理中必然会存在取舍。其次，佢哋实际上并冇提出一个能够让所有澳洲人都受益嘅澳洲愿景。佢哋只系讲呢个系我哋支持方所希望睇到嘅愿景。政府政治归根到底都系关于妥协。无论哪一方有幸成为政府，都不能够只为自己人、自己的支持者或者投票给自己人的执政。你是为了整个澳洲承担受托责任，所以我认为自由党面临的挑战是要清楚说明。第一，我们会为所有澳洲人执政；第二，我们会令到所有澳洲人的生活变得更好的方式来治理这个国家。
So in terms of what happened in the Victoria, do you think that similar cooperation of the coalition will happen in New South Wales as well?
就目前维州所发生的情况来讲，你认为会不会有类似的合作是会在新州发生的呢？
Cooperation, the coalition.
合作的意思你指是什么呢？
With the One Nation Party?
我指的是同联盟党同一国党的合作。
Well, look, I think in New South Wales and everywhere, I mean, look, you know,politics is ultimately about cooperation, right? Even though there's different teams and different parties. So, you know, we will always cooperate with the Labor Party on legislation that we agree with in the parliament, right? Sometimes we cooperate with the Greens. Sometimes we cooperate with One Nation. Sometimes we cooperate with the Teals. If we share the objectives or we share an analysis of what's right, yes, we'll cooperate with them. But by the same token, if we think their prescription or what they're doing or proposing is wrong, well, no, we won't.Cooperate with them. I mean, our objective at the next state election in New South Wales and then the federal election, which is some 2 years away, you know, we'll be to govern with our own right. Now, you know, we want to win as many votes as possible. And ideally that we want them to be first preference votes, primary votes. But if people want to vote for someone else and put us second, well, we'll take that as well. You know, we want to be the choice for a majority of Australians. And, you know, to the extent we can make our appeal as broad as possible, that's what our objective is.
是的，我认为新州以外其他地方政治归根到底都是关于合作，即使有不同的立场、不同的团队、不同的政党，我们都会在议会中就我们同意的立法和工党合作。有时我们会同绿党合作，有时我们会同一国党合作。有时我们都会同挑独立议员合作。如果我们有共同的目标或者对于什么是正确的事情有共同的判断，那我们就会同他合作。但同样的是， 如果我们认为他们提出的方法正是做的事情或者建议是错误，那我们就不会同他合作。我们在下次新州州选的时候，以及大约两年后的联邦大选中的目标是凭自己的力量赢得执政。我们希望赢得尽量可以多的选票，理想的情况底下，我们希望这些票是第一偏好，是亦都是基本票。但如果选民想将票投给第二个，再将我们排第二位，我们亦都会接受，因为我们希望能够成为大多数澳洲人的选择，而我们的目标就是尽可能扩大我们的吸引力。
Understand. So turning into your portfolio of Indo-Pacific, as a competition between the United States and China intensify, how should Australia position itself in the region while balancing the security partnerships such as the AUKUS with its important economic relationship with China?
明白的，那接下来我们来谈谈你有关于印太事务的职责。 随着美国和中国之间的竞争加剧，澳洲应该怎样在本地区域定义自己呢？ 同时要平衡AUKUS等的安全伙伴关系，以及和中国之间的经济关系呢？
So look, I think, I mean, you've just summarised there the challenge for Australian diplomacy, basically. It's firstly not to make a choice. We shouldn't see this as a binary thing. We don't need to pick a side. And in truth, you know, Australia's interests are best served by a US-China relationship that is cooperative, where tensions are limited. Well, we recognise that there are obvious differences, but the truth is that, you know, China is a major power in our region, our neighbourhood. It's not going anywhere. The United States is a major global power and will be so for the foreseeable future, and it's present in the Western Pacific in our neighbourhood as well. It's not going anywhere. It's our interest to make sure that those two countries get along. And for Australia, you know, our security relationship is obviously very close with the United States. I don't think see that changing, but we have a mutually beneficial economic and trading relationship with China. And, you know, neither of us have an interest in harming or hurting that. We've also got, you know, good relations with Japan and with Korea and with Indonesia and, you know, trade and economic and commercial. And I think for a country like Australia, you know, we want to keep all our options open and we want to keep all channels of trade and dialogue and commerce and diplomacy open. That's what serves an interest of a country like ours. Not being forced to choose sides, not trying to choose sides, not trying to turn something into a contest that doesn't need to be a contest. I think too often commentators in this area try and make this a binary thing, like you're either with the United States or you're with China. You've got to choose one or the other. You're all in Team Blue or Team Red. No, I reject that proposition. I think anyone who has Australia's interests at heart would reject that proposition as well.
我认为你刚才已经总结了澳洲外交所面临的挑战。首先，我认为澳洲不应该将这件事视为必须要做出某一边选择的问题。我们不应该将这个视为一个是二选一的问题。我们不需要站其边。事实上，最符合澳洲利益的情况是美中关系保持合作，紧张局势受到控制。 同时，各方亦都承认彼此之间存在明显的分歧。但事实上，中国是我哋所在嘅地区乃至全球嘅重要大国，佢唔会消失，而美国亦都系全球主要大国，并且喺可见嘅未来入边仍然会系咁。美国亦都系存在喺西太平洋以及我哋所在嘅一片土地地区当中，佢亦都唔会消失。确保呢两个国家能够相处良好，系符合澳洲嘅利益。 对于澳洲来讲，我们同美国的安全关系显然非常密切。我唔认为呢点会改变，但同时我们同中国亦都有互利嘅经济同贸易关系，双方都冇利益去伤害或者破坏呢段关系。我们亦都同印 日本、韓國、印尼和其他國家在貿易、經濟和商業方面保持良好的關係。我認為對澳洲這樣的國家來說，我們希望保留所有的選項，希望保持所有的貿易、對話、商業和外交渠道的暢通，這個才符合好像澳洲這樣的國家利益。我們不應該被迫選邊，也不應該主動地企邊，應該不應該將本來不一定要需要成為競爭的事情變成競爭關係。在這個領域裏面，評論人士經常都將事情描述成为一个二元的对立，好似你一系要企喺美国一边，一系你要企喺中国一边，必须要二拣一。好似如果你唔企蓝队，就系要企红队咁。所以我拒绝呢种讲法。我认为任何真正将澳洲利益放喺心上嘅人，亦都会拒绝呢种讲法噶。
So beyond China and the United States, how do you see the importance will Southeast Asia, Asiana, and the Pacific Island nation be to the opportunity of Australia's long-term strategy future cooperating countries.
咁除咗中国同美国之外，你又系点样睇待东南亚、亚太地区以及太平洋岛国对于澳洲长期战略同未来合作机会嘅重要性咧？
So look, I think, I mean, firstly, look, Southeast Asia and the Southwest Pacific are, you know, Australia's nearest neighbours. They're in Southeast Asia in particular, they're very important economic and trading partners.And they're growing in importance, you know, in size and economic weight and importance in global supply chains. And, you know, we have invested a lot in recent years in, you know, our relationship with Vietnam, for instance, our relationship with Indonesia. We've always had, but have had an increasingly close relationship with Singapore, but also countries like the Philippines. You know, we're doing more and more with these countries than we used to. And I think that's important because in many respects, we share a view. I mean, we were talking just before about US-China competition. Australia and Southeast Asia share a view that that competition needs to be kept within limits and that we all, you know, Southeast Asian countries and Australia all have an interest in making sure we have healthy and productive relations with both China and the United States and not being forced to choose sides. The Southwest Pacific, it's a little different because it's much smaller countries with a lower level of development. And they have some unique challenges from, you know, low population, critical economic infrastructure, climate change. And we have a natural, I think, responsibility to those countries. You know, we are the largest sort of power in their area. We're the biggest provider of aid and development assistance. We are often, you know, the place that, you know, you know, children will come, if they leave abroad, they'll come and study in Australia. We'll offer those countries a lot of scholarships. And I think that's important because a stable Southwest Pacific is important for Australia. I mean, you know, Papua New Guinea, there's only, at the closest point, there's only, you know, several kilometres of water separating the northern part of the Torres Strait in Australia and the islands that go across into the southern part of Papua New Guinea. So if those countries are not doing well, or if, you know, there's a global health pandemic outbreak, all those countries have high poverty, Australia will feel the effects of that sort of failures of development. So, you know, we have an interest and also I think a moral responsibility to help support those countries as much as we can.
首先，东南亚和西南太平洋是澳洲最接近的邻近地区，其中东南亚尤其是非常重要的经济和贸易伙伴，而且他们的重要性正在上升当中，无论是规模、经济分量地全球的供应链中的地位方面。近年来，我们在同越南的关系、同印尼的关系投入了很多，我们一直同新加坡保持关系，而这种关系越来越密切。同时，我们同菲律宾等的国家合作亦都有增加。同过往相比，我们正是同这些国家发展 更多的合作。我认为这个很重要的，因为在很多方面我们有共同的看法。好像我们刚刚提到的美中竞争，澳洲和东南亚国家都有同共同的看法。就是这种竞争需要被限制在一定的范围之内。东南亚国家和澳洲都有共同的利益，那就是确保我们能够同时同中国以及美国保持健康且有成效的关系，而不是被迫企边拣边道。西南太平洋的情况稍微有点不一样，因为那里由于 规模更小、发展水平较低的国家组成，而这些国家面临的一些独特挑战包括人口较少、关键基础建设设施不足以及气候变化的问题。我认为澳洲对这些国家是有一种天然的责任，我们是这个地区里面最大的力量，也是最大的援助和发展援助提供者。对于这些国家来的、小朋友来说，如果他们出国留学，澳洲往往是他们选择前往学习的地方，我们都向这些国家提供很多的奖学金。我认为这个很重要的，因为一个稳定的西南太平洋对于澳洲是很重要。而巴布亚新几内亚距离澳洲非常接近，在最近的地方，澳洲托雷斯海峡北部会和通往巴布亚新几内亚南部的岛屿之间只有数公里的海域相隔。因此如果这些国家发展不好，或者出现全球公共卫生疫情，又或者当地的贫穷程度很高，澳洲亦都会感受到这些发展失败所带来的影响。所以我们不单只有现实的利益，亦都有道德的义务，尽可能去支持他们这些国家。
So regarding to the current energy crisis, what do you think Australia playing how should Australia play a role to maintaining the stability across across this crisis? Should we going more diversify with our risk in terms of like extending our cooperation with the Indo-Pacific region with amid the growing geopolitical tensions?
咁讲到去目前嘅能源危机，你认为澳洲应该点样去发展作用，以及维持呢种危机中嘅稳定性呢？喺地缘政治紧张局势上升嘅背景下，澳洲系咪应该透过扩大同印太地区嘅合作，进一步咁分散风险呢
？Look, I'd say two things. I think firstly, we were very poorly prepared for this crisis, but it was very foreseeable. So in the short term, we didn't warn Australians that this crisis was coming, even though we were closing our embassies and evacuating our diplomatic personnel. We didn't warn the Australian public that probably not a good time to travel to the region or anything. And as a result, we had a big scramble when the crisis erupted. You would have seen that people couldn't get out on flights and we had to scramble to put on charters. So I think we were poorly prepared. But in a broader sort of energy security sense, we were very, very poorly prepared. I mean, in the past decade in Australia, Australia's own production of liquid fuels has gone down considerably. We've had a number of refineries close. The last years of the coalition government, the last year, in fact, of the coalition or Liberal government, we rescued the last two refineries to make sure that they didn't close. But we also put in place a fuel security obligation, basically a requirement to hold a certain amount of domestic liquid fuels on shore. The Labor government's been in power for 4 years and hasn't touched any of those settings. We put in place the mechanism to start to improve and build our fuel security and our fuel resilience. They didn't do anything to improve that situation. And as a result now, I mean, Australia's one of the more vulnerable countries to the closure of the Strait of Hormuz than many others because we are very dependent upon imported liquid fuels. I would like to see Australia have a more diversified energy mix. I would like us to be less dependent on imported liquid fuels. And part of the answer to that is developing our own liquid fuels. You know, 25 years ago, Australia was about 75% self-sufficient in liquid fuels, oil products. These days is about 20% self-sufficient. So I'd like us to see that. But also, you know, I would also like to see us make sure that we also have alternative energy sources. So, you know, electrification of trucking and transport and cars, but also waste to energy type plants, methane capture facilities, biofuels. These are all areas where Australia could lessen our dependence if we invest in the technology and the supply chains, lessen our dependence on liquid fuels, and make us more resilient as a country. And if you look at what other countries have done, I mean, China has massive stockpiles of liquid fuels. The United States has the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Japan has massive stockpiles. Korea has big stockpiles. Singapore has big stockpiles. We seem to be the only country who has thought it's fine to rely on, you know, global supply chains. And yeah, bear in mind, the war in Iran didn't come overnight. I mean, we've had 2.5 years of war in the Middle East,
which has involved conflict with Iran throughout. We've had the Russia-Ukraine conflict now in its fifth year. So it's not as if the world looks as it did 10 years ago when major state conflict was almost, you know, unlikely and unforeseeable. The world's changed dramatically just in the last 4 or 5 years, but none of our settings have changed, and I think that's a problem.
我想讲两点。第一，我认为我哋对呢场危机嘅准备非常唔足够，但呢场危机其实可以预见噶。短期嚟讲，我哋冇警告澳洲民众呢场危机嘅即将到嚟，即使我哋正系关闭使馆并撤离外交人员，我哋都冇提醒澳洲公众，而家可能唔系前往该地区旅游嘅好时机。结果就是当危机爆发的时候，我们陷入了相当仓促的应对。你可以看到当时人们没有犯法乘搭航班离开，我们不得不以匆忙地安排包机，所以我认为我们准备得很不充分。但是从更广泛的能源安全角度来讲，我们同样准备得非常之不足。我意思是在过去10年里面，澳洲的本土液态燃料产量大幅下降，我们有多间的炼油厂关闭，在联盟党执政的最后几年，实际上是在联盟党同自或者自由党政府最后一年，我们挽救了最后两间本地的炼油厂，确保他们没有倒闭。而同时我们都建立了燃料安全义务，基本上要求澳洲本地储存两一定的数量的液态燃料。共党政府已经执政4年，但并没有改善对于这些安排作出任何的调整。我们当时有建立的机制开始改善和建设澳洲的燃料安全和燃料韧性，但他们没有采取措施改善这个情况。结果是澳洲如今是霍尔木兹海峡被封锁时较其他许多国家更加脆弱的国家之一。因为我们非常依赖进口液态燃料，我们希望看到澳洲拥有更加多元化的能源结构，也希望我们减少对于进口液态燃料的依赖。其中一部分的解决方案是发展我们自己的液态燃料产能。在25年前，澳洲在液态燃料或者相关的产品方面大约有 75% 是自给率的，如今的自给率大概只有 20%。所以我希望看到这点的改善，但同时我也希望确保澳洲拥有代替的能源来源，譬如货运、交通运输和汽车的电气化，以及废物能源的转能设施。如果我们能够投资相关的技术和供应链，就可以减少对液态燃料的依赖，令到澳洲作为一个国家更具有韧性。好像你看其他国家的做法，中国拥有大量的液态燃料储备，而美国亦都拥有战略的石油储备，日本有大量的储备，而韩国亦都如此。我们似乎是唯一一个认为依赖全球供应链就可以的国家。而且我们要记住，伊朗相关的战争亦不是一夜之间突然出现，中东现在已经有2.5年的时间进入战争状态，而其中一直涉及的与伊朗相关的冲突，俄乌战争冲突如今亦都进入第5年了。所以世界已经不是好像10年前那样，当时的大国之间的重大冲突几乎被认为不太可能，亦都难以预见。仅仅是过去的4-5年之间，世界已经发生巨大的变化，但澳洲的相关政策却没有改变，我认为这个是一个很大的问题。
Yes, thank you for your sharing and your time. I think that's conclude our interview today. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Sally.
多谢你 ，Sally， 好多谢你哋邀请我。
Yeah, thank you very much.
各位听众，我哋今次访问时间差唔多，我哋下次再见，拜拜。